This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, green roofs and living architecture. But first, it's Earth Day. The first one was 45 years ago, and on April 22nd every year since then, people around the world celebrate the day by taking some action to improve the environment. Joining us to talk about the progress we've made to create a greener, cleaner, more sustainable environment worldwide and here in our region are Cincinnati Nature Center Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager Bill Creasy, Brewster Rhodes Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And happy Earth Day, everybody. Good to see all of you.
Nice to be here.
Good to be here.
Brewster and Scott and Bill. Been that kind of a day. Overall, what kind of progress have we made in the 45 years since that first Earth Day?
Well, I would argue we've made incredible progress, and it's because people pressured members of Congress and elected officials to make changes in law. So since 1970, we've had the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Superfund bill that passed it, cleans up all the Superfund site messes, the Right to Know law at the national and state and local levels. There's a lot of legislation that's been put into place to help protect the environment, but only because citizens took action.
Bill, what about how do you view it?
I feel that, you know, the nature centers have grown and grown and grown since back then. We had good zoos, we had good museums, but the nature centers of getting people out and hands-on activities where they could interact with the environment, it really took off back in the 70s. The nature center had been started back in 65, first group in 67, but it went across the country. So parks were put in nature centers, individual communities, and it just continued to grow and grow.
And Scott?
Well, I'm just thinking of when I was a kid in the 60s and in the 70s. We were just talking earlier, you know, blue skies are such a nice thing. And in the summer months, in that time period, you didn't see them very much. It was gray. It was smoky. I still remember smelling coal, you know, being burned for fuel when I was a kid. I remember the condition the Ohio River was in back in the 60s and 70s and how much better it is now. So I think we've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And that's interesting you say that, because I remember as a kid back in the early 70s living around here that in the summertime, you get these days where the air was just awful. I mean,
right.
And this was in the days before unleaded gasoline came out. And so the pollution around here was bad. And we have made a lot of progress since those days. What about the Ohio River, Brewster, that Scott was mentioning? I mean, how's the river doing these days?
Well, as Scott said, the river is getting cleaner and cleaner day by day. Okay. It's now illegal and has been for years since the Clean Water Act to be dumping toxic chemicals and emissions out of plants directly into the Ohio River. We still have a serious challenge with stormwater runoff, with agricultural fertilizers, et cetera, that are creating serious problems for not only the Ohio, but riverways everywhere. But, you know, look, people have been swimming the river for years, but now it's actually safe to do so. And we have our annual river swim every year, and the readings from Orsanco that does the water quality testing showed that the river had absolutely no E. coli in it at all for our last river swim. It was clean as you could possibly imagine, far cleaner than Lake Erie, for example. So not every day of the year is it that way, but the vast majority of time we have an incredibly wonderful natural resource flowing right by our front door, and that's the Ohio.
And overall, what kind of progress do you think Cincinnati's made in improving the environment?
Well, I think tremendous progress. I think right now, Cincinnati and our region, we are on the cutting edge. We are not the most green and sustainable metro in the country, but we are very highly ranked in a number of areas when it comes to energy, when it comes to parks, when it comes to green space, tree canopy. We have a long way to go in some other areas around transportation, for example. So the good news, I think, is this community, this region is really dedicated to being a leader nationally and internationally, and the work of the zoo, the Cincinnati Nature Center, Green Umbrella organizations, I think, are all helping to accelerate that progress.
Bill, what kind of environmental initiatives is the Nature Center involved in?
Well, just this past fall, we started our Milkweed to Monarchs mm-hmm. campaign, and that initiative was to let every person just who has some land plant some milkweed seeds to help the monarch butterflies out. The monarch butterflies have been declining tremendously, and 90-95% of the population has been decimated in the past 20 years. So if you have, for example, the United States, look at the human population. Imagine that human population continuing to decline until there is only the population of Ohio and Michigan left. That's the experience we've got with the monarch butterflies. So we can't see whales go by, and we can save the whales through organizations, but individual people can make a change by planting milkweed seeds in a sunny spot in their yard. And we've given over 100,000 packets out, and we still have plenty more. One of our colleagues in this is the Graders, which almost everybody's familiar with. Graders has been handing out seeds for us. And even today, they're getting part of their proceeds from 4 to 6 for any purchase in the Grader stores to help out this campaign. And so it's a grassroots thing where we want individuals to make a difference by planting some milkweeds. This is the plant the caterpillar must have to feed on, and it's also a nectar source for the adults.
100,000 packets. That is amazing. Now, I don't think a lot of people realize that the milkweed used to be quite common, and it's declined too, hasn't it?
Yes. Various agricultural practices and such, and continuing human expansion, we've lost those plants compared to the previous numbers that were available for the milkweed butterfly, the monarch butterfly. And so, again, a sunny spot, the seed packet comes with directions on how to prepare the seed before planting, and it's a relatively easy thing you can do, and once you get the plant growing, it'll return year after year after year. So we can help the monarchs out by providing food and nectar.
And Scott, you're involved with Taking Root. How's right. that going? Tell us
going,
about that.
Going really well. A lot of exciting things happening. One of the more exciting things is a partnership with the Flying Pig Marathon that we just partnered this week, actually. We solidified the agreement, and it's a great win-win. The Flying Pig kind of wants to offset some of their carbon footprint, and what better way to do it than to plant trees? So they combined with us, and we're working on a small ceremonial planting, actually, for this Saturday at Friendship Park. But many years of partnership of planting trees along the race route that should be very fruitful.
Now, what is the goal of Taking Root? You're trying to plant how many trees by what date?
2 million by 2020. We're planning, obviously, to go on past that. But 2 million by 2020, that would be one tree per person in the tri-state.
And how is it going? Are you making good progress?
Well, our registration process needs work. And if there's a statistician out in Radio Land that wants to join us and help us with that, just give me a call. But it's going really well. We have many things just on the cusp. I'd love to tell you about them, but can't until they're firm. And there's not enough wood in the studio here to knock on. So, things are going terrifically. We're making inroads politically, financially, making great partnerships, a lot of great things happening.
Now, what are the specific benefits of planting a tree?
Oh, it goes on and on and on. Yeah. It's first of all, it's about the only thing you can do today, plant a tree that immediately reaps environmental benefits and community benefits, health benefits, and then does more and more for the rest of your life and beyond if you've done it right. Trees, just a great community building asset, a great environmental asset. Every place in the world is better with more trees, not less, except maybe airports and baseball fields.
Yeah. And I think that planting a tree would be something that's great to do with one of your kids as well. It's a good lesson.
Family, yeah. A family event like no other. I've been lucky to play a part in a lot of seedling plantings, community plantings, and families come out and do that. And it's just wonderful to watch and be a part of.
Yeah, actually, let me just throw in, for a kid, there's nothing more engaging and sort of like the first step towards becoming an environmental steward than actually planting a tree. And then over time, seeing it grow, right, from 1 foot to 5 feet over a short period of time. Right. And so it's the first step for kids, especially to start appreciating the natural world and to connect to it and start feeling like they want to be stewards of it. So it's an investment in the future as well.
You know, my next door neighbor has these two really adorable little girls, and they were over in my yard the other day, and they were looking at this evergreen tree. They're going, wow, that tree is really, really big. It's a Christmas tree, isn't it? Right? And so, yeah, that's a spruce tree. And I got to telling them the story of that tree, Brewster, and you're right about the satisfaction that you feel. My oldest son brought that tree home on an Arbor Day. That tree was maybe a foot at most. And it's been a little over 20 years, and now this tree is 25 feet tall. And there's just a great feeling of satisfaction in doing something like that.
It really is. Yeah, it's fantastic.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk with Rich in Blue Ash. Good afternoon, Rich.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is Rich Kogan, Executive Director of Ohio River Foundation. And so say hi to my colleagues that you have with you today. But I also wanted to mention that I think what is significantly different after these 40 years is the education that's going on in schools that wasn't there when we were in school. And so it's starting at a much younger age, and the plethora of different courses that are available is really changing the dynamic as new generations are starting with an environmental ethic. And I think that's a significant change that has occurred. Something also I wanted to mention, Brewster mentioned how the water quality in the Ohio River is continuing to improve. Well, actually, it has plateaued over the last several years. And we have an issue right now where Ossanko, which is a regulatory body, is looking to actually change the standard regarding mercury pollution in the Ohio River. And there's a concern that there's going to be variances that are going to continue to be granted to different industrial polluters and dischargers. And so we're going to continue to have a mercury problem with the Ohio River. So that's something that we still have to be vigilant about as far as regulatory oversight is concerned, so these things can improve. So the Ohio River can be a place where people can enjoy recreation, fish, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is an ongoing thing. Thanks, Rich. We appreciate the call.
Yeah, Rich is absolutely right. And by the way, the Ohio River Foundation is a wonderful organization. I'd encourage people to check out their website, because what they do every day is work in schools and in the community to plant trees, deal with water quality issues, and raise public policy questions like Rich is raising right now. So I encourage people to check out how they can take action to deal with the issue that he raises.
Now, Brewster, Green Umbrella set a goal of Cincinnati becoming one of the most sustainable metro areas in the country by 2020. How are we tracking on that?
Well, glad you asked. Thank you very much. Yeah, Green Umbrella is, as many folks know, is a alliance of about 250 dues-paying big and small businesses, nonprofits, local governments, and universities throughout our nine-county area in greater Cincinnati and northern Kentucky and southeast Indiana, with those folks coming together to think through what can they do by working better together so we can go further, faster towards being more green and sustainable to give us an economic competitive advantage, but also to deal with the challenges we have in our environment. And we track year by year for each of our teams the progress being made on waste and energy and transportation and outdoor recreation, land, water, local food, trails, and partnering with taking root on the tree issue. So we are making progress in a lot of these areas, but not just because we're talking good about it, because I think we do a good job of marketing what is happening, which is creating some energy and excitement and engagement, but actually measuring the reduction in the amount of fuel that's sold within our metro area for transportation purposes by measuring how much less is being taken to the landfills in the area. Our goal there is 33% reduction. So we're being very meticulous about actually tracking the success of our work, and it's the collective work of so many people engaged in so many ways in this. But people can participate. We'll also try to, of course, get people to be aware of ways they can specifically help. So, for example, on the 14th through 17th of May, Green Umbrella is partnering with PNC and the Players for the Planet effort to recycle. Last year, we did 9 tractor trailer trucks worth of recycled or collected that much of e-waste. So that's computers, TVs, and monitors. And that'll be, it's on the website. Check that out. But it's a wonderful way for folks to actually help reduce the amount of e-waste that goes to landfills in the area.
I'm glad to hear that. Because e-waste is always a toughie, Brewster, because people don't know what to do with it.
And only 20% of it gets recycled. 80% of computers, TVs, monitors, and cell phones end up in landfills. Or in Asia or Haiti with kids getting sick by melting down the metal to try to sell it.
We'll continue our Earth Day conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Cincinnati Nature Center Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager Bill Creasy, Brewster Rhodes, Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email from Barbara, and she wanted to know your thoughts on increased efforts to make people aware about invasive plants that are pushing out native plants.
We've got a lot of that at Cincinnati Nature Center. We had the state come on board about 15 years ago, and they wanted to do regional workshops on invasive plants, each of the Four Corners plus Central Ohio. And they selected the Nature Center, and we said, by all means, and we've got some examples. They gave a reward, so to speak, of a work day of state employees coming in to help remove invasives, and we won that terrible award because we just have so many invasives. It seems like every year something new has cropped up, and some of the ones have been perennial problems. Sometimes they're expanding, and there's no solution right away.
One of the worst things about invasives from a tree standpoint is we're facing right now a loss of a lot of ash trees, maybe 40 million or so in the tri-state because of the emerald ash borer. And between invasive plants and an overpopulation of deer, we're not seeing the resurgence of the forest that you would normally have. So a lot of the species that would normally start as seedlings and grow into mature trees just aren't making it through deer and the invasive, you know, honeysuckle mainly, but other species as well. So it's becoming a problem in just regeneration or forest succession.
Now, Scott, the zoo is considered one of the most green zoos in the country, is it not?
It is.
Well, what kind Number of environmental one. Initiatives are you involved in?
It never stops. I'm involved with the botanical garden side, so we're mm-hmm. working a lot with rain gardens, green roofs, restoring a wetland out at the Boyer Farm, which was willed to the zoo several years ago. But there's also the solar panels and the water-saving initiative. I think there was an article yesterday out about 1 billion gallons of water saved since we've started saving water. That's remarkable. Plus,
that is.
The stormwater runoff efforts that we've made, capturing water that lands on the zoo and using it for irrigation or for water features and keeping it out of the sewer system. So that we're doing a lot of work. It's absolutely amazing to work there and see. You feel like, wow, we're doing so good. And then you hear about them doing more. And it just, it's fantastic.
So just when you think they can't top it, they top it.
They top it,
yeah.
Yep.
Well, you have the greenest restaurant in America, correct?
That's right. I tend to forget that. You know, restaurant that uses the ingredients. I don't know that much about restaurants, to be honest with you. But they
Me
do.
Neither, except I can eat there.
But there is, yeah, exactly. But there is a rating system to determine how restaurants are green. And ours was one of, if not the very number one, Brewster's saying to me. So, yeah, number one in the country.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
One of the things that helps make a difference, too, with the alien invasives is the volunteer support that we get. We, you know, teach our volunteers how to go home and make changes within their own selections of what they plant and what they might already have invading. But with over 1,000 acres at our main site, we have an incredible volunteer corps that's out there removing the bush honeysuckle, and you know, we're planting trees in the place of some of those so that we can continue to try and get rid of the invasive plants because they are going to be a perennial problem.
Yeah, it's a never-ending struggle,
isn't
it, Bill?
Right,
yeah.
Right, and getting people involved is what all of us around the table are trying to encourage, incent, make happen. I would be so proud of our region if we were given a national honor for the community that gets more people in schools and businesses and communities engaged in environmental restoration and in investing volunteer time in helping improve the quality of the environment in this region. That would speak so much to the success of all of our work and would make a huge difference in
Indeed.
So many ways.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's a lot that people can do on an individual basis, Bill. I know you're big about promoting that. I know Brewster is too. What kinds of things can people do to help make planet Earth healthier?
Well, one of the things they can do is continue to reduce, reuse, recycle. I mean, we've learned that mantra, but the Hamilton County Recycling Solid Waste District has a great website, and you think, well, I've got some batteries. What do I do with them? Do I just throw them in the trash? No, they can recycle all these different products that we have that, you know, run out of time, their life is up. How do we get rid of the light bulbs properly with the new chemicals that are in the light bulbs? So I'll give you that website, and you can, you know, link it onto your website.
Yeah, we've got it on wvxu.org, okay. I'm sure. So
it's you know, a great site, so you can recycle over and over and over and continue to do that. And then the planting, the landscaping selections, you know, planting with native species. We're doing that all the time at the center, but individuals can do that as well. And they're more adapted to drought conditions that might come along, you know, particular weather patterns. So they can consider what they do in their landscaping and make changes that way. Also, what they put on the land. Do they really need that biocide, whether it's an herbicide, you know, insecticide, do they really need to use it? I have a lawn, but it's probably got 20 or 25 different species of plants in that, quote, lawn. It's not fescue grass. It's just green. That's all I need.
But just imagine if every school in the entire region of Greater Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, and Indiana, every business, every neighborhood or community council, every nonprofit organization had a green team whose job it was to think through what can we do with the property that we own, and this includes religious organizations, churches, mosques, synagogues. What can we do with the property we own to properly plant it so we reduce stormwater runoff, to plant, use our place to grow food for local community gardens for food, to plant trees? What can we do to make sure that our organization is a fully recycled, hopefully a zero-waste organization, given what we do with our festivals and our day-to-day business. But if we can decentralize the implementation of an aggressive volunteer-led environmental agenda, we will be number one in America.
Brewster, does green make sense for businesses and the community from an economic standpoint?
Well, if it didn't, Procter & Gamble, Macy's, major organizations and corporations and municipalities would not be investing dollars to ultimately save energy, reduce waste, improve transportation systems, make communities more desirable and walkable and more energy efficient in the buildings that they construct. So that's happening every day. P&G is driving. Their goal is reducing by 2025 their use of water by 25%, their transportation footprint by about the same percentage. They do it to save money. To make sure that they're competitive in the marketplace, because people are using their dollars to reflect their values, are increasingly saying, I want to buy services and products from companies that get it. And if you don't get it, you're going to lose people's business. So it's becoming an imperative in the marketplace as well.
Scott, what's your advice as far as eco-friendly tips and things that people can do on an individual basis to help clean up the environment?
Plant a tree.
Plant a tree. That's got to be your number one.
I'm kind of a one-trick pony. I can't help but say, you know, that for this region, which would normally be a forest anyway, part of one of the great forests on the planet, that getting outside and planting a tree or many trees is still just a fantastic thing to do.
That canopy is important.
It cools the earth. It locks up carbon. It builds communities. Everything about trees is good. I say that over and over.
Habitat for wildlife. You know, all the different wildlife.
The wildlife.
And it can be any tree, right? I mean,
No. Actually, okay. We'll go back to the invasive plant issue we were just talking about. We did just put on our website. You know, our registration process is important to us, and counting every tree is important to us. But we just put on our website that we don't want to count calorie pears or Bradford pears, as they're known. And the simple fact of the matter is they do more harm to the environment than good, because they invade natural areas and prevent other diverse species from growing there, particularly natives. So apart from that, we're pretty much fair game for almost any other species of trees. There's some, obviously, that are better than others. And the more out there you are, the more native you ought to go. But in the urban environment, it's nice to have some extra diversity in your toolbox.
Now, can you tell me some more about the Earth Day event the zoo is holding?
Yeah, we're having our first Tunes and Blooms this year because every Thursday has been rainy. Tomorrow night, so we still have tulips in bloom, but it's also the party for the planet. So a lot of vendors are out there with lots of opportunities to get involved with green activities and initiatives in the tri-state, and also live music and food and beer, and by the way, it's free. So come to the zoo tomorrow night and enjoy all of that. And I want to go back and add, we've talked about volunteerism quite a bit here, and it's extremely important. But if you're on the fence about volunteering for anything, give it a try. It is one of the most rewarding, fun, feel-good things that you could possibly do. And it's almost impossible not to have a good time when you're out there volunteering, even though sometimes it's hard work.
And Brewster, we got about 30 seconds left. Can you tell us about the Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit? It's coming up May 1st, I think.
Yes, May 1st, Friday, May 1st at Cintas Center at Xavier University. Green Umbrella is sponsoring the Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit. We're bringing folks from a variety of cities throughout this part of the Midwest to Cincinnati for a day-long opportunity to learn from each other and network. We have the Deputy Director of the US EPA is our keynote speaker coming from Washington. We have a Mayor's Forum, Sustainability Managers Forum, and great workshops in the afternoon. And we still have a few spaces available for folks to register. We're selling out fast. They can check it out on your website, which will get people to ours. Thank you.
So, Bill Brewster and Scott, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Cincinnati Nature Center Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager Bill Creasy, Brewster Rhodes, the Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance, and Scott Berline, who is the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist, and he's the Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign.